Welcome. You are listening to the Audio Information Network of Colorado. This recording is intended to be used solely by individuals with barriers to print.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us for the December 6th reading of The Environment, a compendium of articles from the Nature Conservancy magazine, the Sierra Club magazine, Mother Earth News, and a few others that we can choose from. My name is John. Today, the following main article, Divided by Politics, a Colorado Town Mends Its Broken Bones. 2 years after death threats and aspersions roiled Little Silverton, the town has found a semblance of peace and a lesson for a ruptured nation. This article was written by Jonathan Weissman. It's hard to say precisely when Silverton, Colorado, started to come apart, but the town election of April 7, 2020 might be a good moment to begin this story. That was when a young, progressive New York lawyer and adventure skier named Shane Furman beat the longtime fire chief Gilbert Archuleta, part of Silverton's old guard, by 10 votes to become the new mayor. To supporters, mainly of his generation, Furman, 42, represented progress. After working at top finance firms in Manhattan, he had returned to his native Colorado and renovated the old Wyman Hotel on Green Street, not in the mountain town Victorian style of the Grand Imperial a block away, but as an elegant, hip boutique inn with rooms going for as much as $385 per night. To Furman's opponents in the former mining town of 796 residents, he was the incarnation of the T-word, Telluride, and the A-word, Aspen, with their staggering housing prices, luxury outposts, and billionaire denizens. Their skepticism turned to anger 14 months into Furman's tenure when he declared that the council would stop reciting the Pledge of Allegiance until further notice. He said he was concerned about a town trustee who had received threats for not participating in the pledge, but that did not stop his critics from standing during a council meeting and shouting their allegiance to Old Glory as the mayor glumly watched. Soon, Fox News broadcast a Fox and Friends episode from the Grand Imperial Hotel in which Mayor Furman's critics questioned his motives. There was a feeling like the mayor was monopolizing Silverton, said Cole Davenport, a Marine Corps combat veteran who opened his cannabis dispensary on Green Street in 2019. Death threats poured into Furman's office. City Hall was shuttered for safety's sake. An effort to recall the mayor was begun, a deeply personal affront in a tiny town where there is no anonymity, even in a trip to one grocery store. Silverton split along familiar political lines, with pickup trucks suddenly flying giant Trump signs. The skirmish was a sobering rebuke to those who believe that if Republicans and Democrats, liberals and conservatives, could just live and work together, the forces of division pulling the nation apart would find no purchase. But as in the country at large, it seemed the town would become hopelessly divided. Then, a kind of miracle happened. Silverton came back together again. A town built on division. Silverton, nestled 9,318 feet above sea level in a shallow valley of the majestic San Juan Mountains, is by no means any town, USA. From Durango, more than an hour away, one road leads in from the south, with hairpin turns and breathtaking passes. Aspen forests shimmer in gold in mid-October, but the snows that can close U.S. Route 550 for days started falling before Halloween. The town's roots were planted in 1860, when miners tapped the Sunnyside Silver Vein. The government pushed out the Southern Utes by treaty in 1874, and the rush was on. Fashionable citizens built graceful Victorian hotels, shops, and homes along Green Street, still the only paved road in town, while miners and prostitutes crowded into boarding houses and bordellos on Blair Street, which ran muddy and rough a block east. Silverton became known as the Queen City of the San Juans. Our town was built on social division and classism, said Deanne Gallegos, who heads Silverton's tourism outreach and its Chamber of Commerce and the Public Information Office of rugged San Juan County, in which Silverton is the only municipality. Her grandparents came for the mines, which supported livelihoods in town until the last one closed in 1991. What saved Silverton was tourism. The town's population nearly triples in the summer, catering to visitors passing through by car, hiking in from the Colorado Trail and Molas Pass, or disgorged by the Durango and Silverton Narrow Gauge Railroad, from which some tourists claim Bigfoot was spotted this past October. 100 or so seasonal residents nudge up the population in the winter, drawn by helicopter skiing and backcountry hike and skis on the ungroomed Black Diamond trails of Silverton's peaks. "We like that it's rough around the edges," said Clem Branner, the 51-year-old Danish-born founder of Venture Snowboards on the edge of Silverton. "And yet the town is growing, little by little, with an influx of educated young professionals lured from Denver, the suburbs of Milwaukee, and even New York. Silverton's new preschool houses 21 babies and toddlers, and 87 students attend the town's state-of-the-art K-12 school, which offers experiential learning and progressive education. Housing prices are creeping up, and the threat of chain stores looms as an omnipresent worry. The factors that divide Silverton will be familiar to even the casual student of America's partisan divide. Less educated workers and old-timers, baby boomers with links to the mining past, felt left behind, manipulated, and even persecuted by the new liberal, educated millennial professionals imprinting their ideas on Silverton with little or no consultation, according to their critics. "We used to be close-knit," said Gary Davis, a retiree and part-time volunteer at the San Juan County Historical Society, who came to Silverton a quarter century ago. "Then the newcomers came and tried to change the town into what they wanted it to be." A new mayor arrives at City Hall. In retrospect, Shane Furman and his political rise seem almost preternaturally designed to bring Silverton's generational tensions to a boil. Furman grew up in Colorado and Oregon, but went to college at Skidmore in upstate New York and law school in Brooklyn, and worked at top finance law firms in Manhattan. To those who find his Wyman Hotel renovation a bit frou-frou, he counters that he created a dormitory in the back with beds for as little as $75, and that a Montucky Cold Snacks tall boy sells at the bar for just $2. Tasteful growth is how a supporter, Daniel Clute, put it. But Silverton residents also point to the bulldozers leveling the land that Furman bought after his election for building housing that many could just as soon do without. Grumbling turned to bitterness in May 2021 over the brash, noisy 4x4s that tourists like to ride into town. Aesthetically minded Silvertonians found them awful, like living in Mad Max movie, Branner said. But many small business owners, largely Republicans like Gigi Rain, whose Mountain Memories sells photos of the Rockies and other mementos, were convinced they were a lifeline. With what supporters of the vehicles insist was little warning, Furman and his allies on the Board of Trustees banned them. Around that time, residents just returning to in-person town council meetings after the pandemic noticed that another progressive on the board, Jordan Bierma, who opposes nationalism and tribalism in all forms, was not saying the Pledge of Allegiance. For weeks after, Furman said, Bierman was harassed and his wife was yelled at with their baby in the park. The mayor decided the pledge was the problem. On June 14th, Flag Day of all days, Furman declared that its recitation would be suspended until further discussion could resolve his concerns. "Any other unilateral decisions we need to know about?" an indignant council member, Molly Barella, asked him. Not long after, a group at a council meeting used the comment period to angrily stand and recite the pledge on their own. A clip made its way to Fox News. "That's my fault. I'm being 100% honest," Albert Heyrich, 63, conceded in the lobby of the Villa de Laval Hotel, which he and his wife manage. He confessed that he had sent the clip to Sean Hannity as a display of true patriotism. Heyrich also peppered town officials with inflammatory letters and emails. "When people were making bomb threats to town hall, I felt awful," he said, "because that was not my intent." Dana Cranker, a 40-year-old town trustee who moved to the small town from a downtown neighborhood in Denver, summed things up this way. the town got trumped. Fox and Friends interviewed Barella and two other townspeople, introducing them as proud Americans who were standing up for their country. Representative Lauren Boebert, whose vast House district includes Silverton, declared Furman an anti-American disgrace. The Board of Trustees soon resumed saying the pledge, but the threats against Bierma accelerated, most from out of town, he said. Kelly Freese, the town clerk, said she was forwarding so many death threats and violent phone messages to the sheriff, the town hall and the visitor centers had to be closed. When the Proud Boys promised a visit, Furman left town for 10 days or so after San Juan County Sheriff deputies told the mayor the threats on his life were credible and he did not have the resources to protect him. That was rough, Furman said. It almost ruined Silverton for me. Then Davenport, the weed dealer, Rain, the knick-knack seller, and Floyd Barella, a brewery owner and the husband of Molly Barella, moved to recall Furman, Bierma, and the mayor pro tem, Sally Barney. Still clearly shell-shocked, Barney sat on her couch in Silverton in October, her two daughters playing in earshot, her husband guiding heliskiers in Patagonia, and contemplated how to explain the personal damage done that summer. It was not fun, she said, with no trace of irony. I wouldn't want to go through it ever again. Brokering a peace. What the world was seeing that pandemic summer was a town pulling apart. Unseen were the first efforts to restore peace. Well before the trouble started, Community Builders, a nonprofit in Glenwood Springs, Colorado, had been hired by Silverton to draft a new 10-year master plan for the town. The Compass Project, as the effort was known, would evolve from a prosaic task into a prolonged effort to heal this community. One summer night, Melody Skinner, a retired sheriff's dispatcher, was invited by two men from Community Builders to a meeting of just three citizens at the Benson Lodge on Green Street. She entered the hotel's workspace and encountered a county commissioner named Pete McKay. Having taken up opposing sides on town issues in the past, they eyed each other and both declared they could not sit down together. Instead, Skinner, 66, went off alone with Clark Anderson, Community Builders Executive Director, to talk over the town's future and vent her feelings of disorientation, anger, and grief. We've had big rows before, but this one was vicious because of the national political spectrum, Skinner said, referring to the era of Donald J. Trump. Trump had opened the spigot of being openly mean and just bad to other people. Community Builders would try to shut off that spigot by bringing residents together in the smallest of groups, away from microphones and public spaces, to see if they could find a common vision for Silverton's future. Since its formation in 2016, Community Builders had worked throughout the Mountain West on economic development and town planning projects. It navigated the divide between citizens who wanted an expansion of tourism around the resort town of Crested Butte, Colorado, and those who wanted more limited growth. In Taos, New Mexico, the organization tried to bring the social divisions splintering the legacy Hispanics, whose Spanish forefathers created the picturesque town, the white hairs, Anglos who turned it into a chic artist colony, and native Tao Pueblos and the Latino workers. In Silverton, Anderson found the bitter politics of the Trump era in a town that had prided itself on neighbor helping neighbor. Silverton's always struggled with community tensions. It probably always will, he said. But the tenor of our leadership at the national level and the voices we listen to on the news, on the radio, online, they have tremendous influence, more than they used to. Community Builders asked questions that were intentionally open-ended. Why do you love to live here? What are your hopes for the future and your life here? What are your fears? That approach gets at something more visceral than, what do you want to see in the downtown, Anderson explained. Over a year and a half, virtually every resident of Silverton took part. Branner, the Venture Snowboards founder, still marvels at the impact of those meetings. The only thing they could have done to get more was go door to door and make people show up at gunpoint, he said. It turned out that newcomers and old-timers, millennials, and baby boomers pretty much wanted the same thing for Silverton, to let the town grow slowly but keep it cohesive and self-supporting. Fears of rampant growth were largely misplaced. Tourism was way up, but residency is barely climbing, and new businesses were opening, but worries over Starbucks and McDonald's seemed overblown once laid out on the table. People are afraid of what they don't know, and their tendency is not to go into the cave that they're afraid of, but go around it, Anderson said. The Coffee Bear, a favorite hangout, became something of a Compass Project headquarters, though Holly Hubner, the cafe's owner, conceded that not everyone in Silverton felt comfortable there. "We got labeled the Millennial Coffee Shop," said Hubner, who grew up in Massachusetts and bought the cafe in September 2020. Through painstaking conversations, the temperature began to drop, the groups grew larger, and common ground was re-established. The new climate was apparent on October 12, 2021, when voters cast their ballots on whether to recall the mayor. The news crews were gone. The town hall was back open. Furman survived, with 263 rejecting his ouster against 214 who wanted him out. The trustees, Berma and Barney, survived by slightly wider margins. Community builders' work was not finished. When Anderson arrived in town, he was told a center of dissent was the firehouse, where the volunteer chief of 35 years, Archuleta, stubbornly took pot shots at Mayor Furman's management style. Archuleta wanted nothing to do with the Compass Project and publicly objected to the way Community Builders was hired, with $40,000 put up by the town, $40,000 from the state, and $17,250 raised by Community Builders from the Gates Family Foundation. By the end, that figure raised and contributed by Community Builders surpassed $65,000. "I was saying, this guy has to follow the same rules as everyone else," he said of Anderson as he washed down his truck behind the fire station that bears his name. They said, "You don't understand. These guys are coming in to save us." Well, nobody's coming in to save us. Anderson leaned on an intermediary who implored Archuleta to open his doors. What followed were a half dozen meetings at the firehouse stretching into 2022 to go over matters of affordable housing, snow removal, and trust. In the end, everyone was pretty much in agreement, Archuleta conceded. On April 12, 2022, the firefighters held a happy hour and taco bar at the station to unveil the master plan. "We just stopped listening to each other." The 77-page document does not jump out as extraordinary, but the process that produced it was, Silvertonians say. "We were desperate," Gallegos, the head of tourism outreach, admitted. "We could have never done that by ourselves. We would not have known how." Even Heyrich, the curmudgeonly conservative who had tipped off Fox News, got involved. His view was not popular. He opposed building affordable housing in town because, he said, it's part of mountain culture to sleep on the couch in group houses and not to rely on government. But he publicly apologized to the town for his behavior, attributing his contrition in part to Community Builders. "The Compass Project helped shift the power dynamic in town," said Birma, the trustee who had declined to say the Pledge of Allegiance. "When we don't give voice to some of our community members, it gives them that perception of, well, maybe I don't have a say." In retrospect, much of Silverton's discord was tied to the COVID-19 pandemic, the retreat from common spaces, and the advent of Zoom calls with their alien feel. COVID pushed people back to tribalism, Jim Harper recalled in October. Harper, a self-described, hardcore, right-leaning independent, was standing on Green Street waiting for tourists to disembark from the vintage steam train his family operates between Durango and Silverton. "Whether it was locally or on a national level, we just stopped listening to each other," he said contritely. "Silverton is a microcosm." Davenport, the cannabis dispensary owner who started the mayoral recall drive, also has apologized, calling his petition the great mistake. But his role in it has not been easy to live down. Davenport agreed to meet a reporter for dinner and a frank discussion, but in Durango, more than an hour from his shop. On a Tuesday evening in mid-October, Anderson stopped by town hall to see how the peace was holding. Silverton's town administrator, Gloria Kask-Bruger, was planning a new round of learning sessions with citizens and was pleading with Anderson to help at least with the first few sessions. "I don't want to say you're a big celebrity here, but you're a big celebrity here," she said, to which he replied, "Being a big celebrity in Silverton is like being taller than my grandma, but I'll take it." There are still skeptics who think the Compass Project will soon be forgotten and the town will resume its brawling. The coming election season, with Trump likely on the ballot, could be enough to pick the scab. "I've been here long enough to see people come to town in their fancy clothes with their business cards, then leave town, and all they did was spend our money," said Davis, the Historical Society volunteer, standing outside his house, its roof of soil, rock, and scrub, giving it the feel of a bunker. Heyrich agreed that the strife dividing America could easily return to Silverton. "This town has a love of grudge," he cautioned, but he had kind words for a mayor he once threatened and accused of bullying. "Overall, I think Shane has been a positive force," Heyrich said. "He made a lot of amateur political errors that cost him, but you know, if he wasn't who he was, all that New York lawyer stuff, I think people would really see the good that he's done." And we have a short article from the Magazine of the Sierra Club. "For too many kids, getting outside is easier said than done," by Ben Jealous. "Last week, after a restful Thanksgiving, my family made a deliberate choice to opt outside on Friday. Opt outside is a growing movement in which participating organizations and companies close their doors on Black Friday, give their employees a paid day off, and encourage all of us to embrace the serenity of nature instead of succumbing to the frenzy of Black Friday shopping. I am an outdoors enthusiast from a long line of outdoors enthusiasts. As a dad, I try to instill a strong love of nature in my kids and make sure they reap the vast benefits of spending time outside in and among nature. However, I'm aware that my family's ability to enjoy the outdoors is a blessing that's been denied to many other Black families. Like pollution and climate change, inadequate access to nature is not a crisis shouldered equally. Sadly, it won't surprise you that it falls hardest on people of color and low-income communities. A study of park accessibility by the Trust for Public Land concluded that systemic racism and redlining have led to chronic disinvestment in parks and recreational facilities in marginalized communities. The result is one that perpetuates a cycle of inequality. Too few parks, as well as parks marred by cracked asphalt, barren fields, and broken play equipment. All people, and especially children, need easy access to safe, clean, outside spaces for healthy bodies and minds. Yet one-third of all Americans, among them 28 million children, do not have any sort of park or natural space within a 10-minute walk of their home. Lack of nature access is not only an issue of one's physical proximity to a park or green space. People of color, especially Black people, have an unfortunate history in this country of segregation and exclusion from public lands and natural places. We've been met with threats and violence while in nature, and for too long we were even excluded from the conservation movement fighting to protect natural lands. The consequences of this are still felt today. What does this nature gap and nature deficit mean for our kids? Years of studies have shown that children who spend less time outdoors are more likely to deal with physical health problems, ranging from childhood obesity to vitamin D deficiency, as well as reduced motor skills development and higher rates of emotional illnesses like anxiety and depression. Meanwhile, we also know that when kids spend time in nature, besides the general benefits of exercise, it helps build confidence, reduce stress, and promote creativity. So closing the nature gap as a goal should be a priority to all of us who have fought long and hard to close the opportunity gaps faced by our kids and our communities. That's why I'm glad that this week marks a broad, rejuvenated push for Congress to pass the Bipartisan Outside for All Act, which would increase access to nature and opportunities for outdoor recreation in urban and low-income communities. By codifying the Outdoor Recreation Legacy Partnership into federal law, The Outdoors for All Act would make the immense benefits of local parks more equitable and accessible to all. Those benefits, according to the office of Senator Alex Padilla, one of the bill's sponsors, include job creation, shade and tree cover, and clean air, as well as new trails, green spaces, playgrounds, cultural gathering spaces, and more. It all adds up to healthier bodies and minds for our children, and building more of a shared understanding for all of us, or why spending time outdoors and protecting nature are so critical to our well-being. Author Ben Jealous is the executive director of the Sierra Club, America's largest and most influential grassroots environmental organizations. And that is the end of our time this evening. Thank you so much for joining us for the December 6th reading of The Environment. My name is John.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aincolorado.org or by calling 303-786-7777.